Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. This is the second episode in the series Who Am I? And today we want to approach the question through individual psychology. So what is it that you want to say about this today? We're off down the canal again, by the way, as ever. So all the background noises you'll hear are barges and people and dogs and cyclists and alligators and things.
Alligators, yeah, and dinosaurs.
So?
Pterodactyls. Sharks. Okay. This is the obvious way of approaching the question, who am I? If you asked Joe in the street, if you were to walk up to him and say, excuse me, sir, who are you? First thing he'd say, he says, well, I'm Joe Bloggs. He'd give you his name. And, well, that wouldn't be very satisfying, would it? You'd be none the wiser. The only thing you'd know is how to call the guy over, you know, or how to shout him, or how to beckon him.
Yeah.
So forth. So, you know, that doesn't get us very far, really. We know that individual human beings are given names, or they give themselves names.
Yeah. But then the next thing you'd say, if you asked a little bit further, okay, could you tell me a little more about yourself, Joe Bloggs?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you could even say to Joe Bloggs, this, and I've done this in kind of when I've had jobs and silly things like that, you know, you're having a discussion in the canteen and you say, well, how would you answer the question, who are you? And the instinctive answer of just about everybody is to then start giving an account of all the things that have happened to you.
Yeah.
And there's a sense that who we are is the sum of all the things that we've done that have happened to us. The storehouse of our pasts.
Yeah.
Is what we are, and it's who we are, our identity. In that ordinary sense, is construed like that. So for instance, it's an item of your past that you were born female.
Yeah.
And that's a part of your identity. Your gender identity becomes a part of your identity on this notion of identity as being somehow the sum of our past. So you've got your gender identity there because you were at the moment of conception, or I don't know, some few weeks after conception. You're differentiating into a female. Similarly, you were born in England. So you're English. So you're a part of your identity. It's English female.
Yeah.
Yeah? So but also, like,
we think of ourselves as our biographies.
As our biographies, yeah. Now, this is something that was worked up by Freud. In the early 20th century. And it's the psychoanalytic view of identity. And, I mean, that basically is saying, yes, we are the sum of our pasts. But not only are we the sum of our pasts, but in very many situations, there's one kind of process that takes place to consolidate their identity. And this is all kind of Freud stuff about the Oedipus complex and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of variants on this idea. You know, there is a pattern to acquiring an identity.
So do you think when most people are asking themselves the question of who am I, that's usually where they'd start?
That's usually where they would start, yeah. And yeah. I think it's kind of legitimate to start there, actually, because it gives you a good purchase on the notion of identity.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to start there.
Yeah, and bearing in mind that for most people walking about in Wolverhampton Town Centre there, you know, that if you ask them, they would say the name, they might say the date of birth, and they say, I'm from Somalia, or I'm from Bilston, or I'm from London.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes, and I'm female and I'm English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So most people...
I'm male and I'm a Christian.
Most you see, people how we would stop there.
Yeah.
They think of their biography.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they would say, oh, that's who I am. That's what I'm going to identify myself with. That's my identity.
Yeah.
And then they would stop.
Yeah.
But of course, that's not always enough.
Yeah. And you know, Freud's contribution to that, that understanding, is that he attempts to show at least the ways in which there's a pattern to that acquisition of identity in childhood. You know, he's interested in child rearing. I mean, it sounds like a kind of a trite thing these days to say that, well, your identity is something that you are given through the educational processes that you were subjected to. You know? Now, there's a lot of variance on this theme. A lot of different accounts, and Freud's disciples argued endlessly about it. And to the point that it seems as though there's an infinite number of stories you can tell about that. You know? We can gloss it in a lot of different ways, and they're all more or less adequate to what we find in the world with people.
Yeah.
But what that makes me conclude is that, well, this is one of those stories that's open to infinite interpretation. Even in the light of the facts, you know, that our ultimate story is always, it's underdetermined by the facts. We can tell a lot of different versions. And that makes me want to generalise, really, and just say, well, one way of answering the conundrum of identity is to talk about biography. You know, and just to keep it as general as that. Now, because we're keeping it very general, because we're keeping the question general, we're able to reflect on it a little bit more clearly than if we're trying to get to grips with the details of the resolution of the Oedipus complex and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of which is culturally specific anyway. You can't get to grips with it through that. But keeping it very general, you can get to grips with it. And you can see that there's a problem straight away with attempting to answer the question biographically. Now, I'm not saying don't do that, and I think in terms of individual therapy, individual self-exploration,
it's a useful starting
point. It's dead useful.
And possibly essential.
Yeah. And possibly even essential. And certainly, maybe even fascinating, and maybe even productive of art as well.
Yeah.
So it's got a lot going for it in some ways.
Yeah.
But there's this problem at the core of approaching stuff that way. And that problem is presented to you and I precisely now as we walk along this canal.
Yeah.
And when we're looking at the ducks, and it's... Because it's a fine day,
yeah.
we're kind of enjoying what's around us. We're looking at stuff and getting the aesthetic pleasure of seeing the leaves begin to turn for the autumn. And in that immediacy of knowing that you are there, conscious, the sense of some kind of a presence that is able to whole consciousness.
Well, you're experiencing yourself as a presence.
You're experiencing yourself as a presence as we walk along. It's immediate. I'm not going to say it's in the now, because everything's in the now. That doesn't help, Santa. But there's a kind of an immediacy to one's sense of oneself. In other words, my feeling of my identity here now, my biography and the whole of my past is no doubt acting somewhere in the equation, but I'm not aware of it. I've got this other sense of being a self, of being simply present. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're probably feeling the same at this moment. You know that you're past this kind of quite shadowy. It's in there. It's operating unconsciously. It's a part of your operating system and all the rest of it. But at the same time, it's kind of not really there, is it? That much.
Just in the background.
Yeah. And there's this other question around this presence.
Yeah.
This presence.
Yeah.
So you can get so... Why I'm saying this is because you can get locked into, I think somebody called it a primal rut. You know, whereby you just go round and round and round in the details, in the labyrinths of your own memories and your own unconscious impressions and your own traumas forever. It can become like the labyrinth that you can't find your way out of. There's no thread. There's no guiding thread to get you out of it.
Yeah.
And it's a danger, primal rut. It's a danger in as much as it stops you from living. You know, and the wonderful aesthetic experience of human life. Get subdued, you know, and masked by too much of a loss into the primal rut. So I say to people, if you do have an existential crisis, an identity crisis, suffering from ontological insecurity, you don't know who you are, where you are, and where you belong, and it's painful to you, get it sorted out quick. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Easier said than done sometimes, though.
But easier said than done sometimes. But of course, we're walking along here, you know. We're lucky enough to live in a fairly comparatively peaceful society. It's not really that peaceful, but it's comparatively peaceful. And we're able to bunk off here and walk along on this lovely autumn day, catching the glint on the water. And that immediacy is available to us. It's available to us, isn't it?
Yeah.
We could be really, really suffering with our neuroses and such like, and twitching and writhing under the influence of our past traumas, which do that to people, don't they? They kind of keep playing round, you know, it's like they get stuck in a loop.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, even if that were to apply, it's only half a breath away from this.
Yeah.
From this. So, I am just wanting to, you know, this, we were talking earlier on about how we wanted to be practical about this and helpful. And I think, well, psychotherapy is great.
And I think
it's all very well, but get it sorted quick.
If you are, stuck in past traumas, and as you said, sort of going round and round in circles and quite trapped in the pain of that, I think realising that you're not your biography, for me, is actually very helpful to release that.
Yeah.
It's like almost, oh,
yeah.
I'm not that pain.
No.
And it helps you to move forward.
Yeah, it's worth bearing that in mind, but also being careful not to get into denial of ownership.
Yeah.
Of, this is a funny thing, this, and when we get onto Advaita, we'll see how funny it can get. But the particulars of your life, your particularity as an individual human being, with a sense of your identity, gendered, ethnic, etc., that's totally fine. We should celebrate that. We can celebrate particularity.
Yeah.
We don't need, in the name of being clear or anything like that, to kind of repudiate the fact that we are contingent beings with pasts. You know, and you'll notice I said, okay, in this presence, this presence whereby you and I are a bit enraptured by the glint of the sun on the water.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, the past is operating, but it's operating behind the scenes, as it were, you know, as a part of the apparatus of perception. I'm with Bergson on this. There's no perception without memory.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't mean to say you're consciously remembering. I'm not consciously remembering when I walked along this path when I was 5 years old. But it's in there as a part of my inbuilt making sense of my understanding.
Yeah.
Because awareness, consciousness, is automatically understanding. Understanding is built right into the warp and weft of consciousness itself. That means that the past memory, albeit unconscious memory, is built into this actual perception, moment to moment, that we're enjoying as we walk along this path.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just summarise this first, this part two on the psychological stroke individual approach to the who am I question. And basically we're saying that there is an approach you can take, and there is taken, to a question of identity, in other words, who am I, that pays a lot of attention to an individual's biography, the details of an individual's past. And it's in the individual's past that is laid down. Such common places of identity like gender, ethnicity, nationality, and all of these kind of things that attach to identity, in other words, to a possible answer to the question, who am I? I am my past.
Yeah.
I am my fatherland. I am my gender. I am my social class. I am all the things that happened to me. I am a unique individual, etc. So that's one way.
That's just one way. Yeah. And it would be a good starting point.
Yeah, therapeutically, it's interesting and necessary for some people and all the rest of it. But we would advise, I think, don't get locked into the labyrinths of psychoanalysis. I can put it just very crudely.
So in the next episode, what would you like to talk about there?
Well, in the next episode, I'm going to talk about the first of three metaphysical readings that I think we need to look into. And the first one would be a look at Vedanta. Mostly in its Advaita articulation.
And what does that mean?
Advaita means non-dual.
Yeah.
Non-dual, not two. The word Advaita means not two.
Yeah.
Dva is two. Ah. Whenever it's a negative participle in Sanskrit, it just means not two. Not two. It's the notion that there is just not two. There's one thing.
Right.
And we'll explore that.
Okay.
Okie doke. Over and out.